You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast.
So we have this great speaker series. Woody Geisman was able to go to recently a conference, and he got to interview Patrick Kennedy, and this is at the Moments of Change Conference on Addiction and Mental Health in Palm Beach, Florida, run by Foundations. We really think this is important because it's someone talking about stuff that we find important. And the nice thing about Patrick Kennedy, because of his family's history, he gets a pulpit. He can talk about things that the rest of us would love to. We talk about it all the time, but nobody listens. But when someone like Patrick Kennedy talks about it, so, I mean, we all listen. So
we're going to roll that interview with Patrick right now.
Patrick, thank you so much for making it here.
My pleasure. Thanks, Woody.
You know, I listened to your message this morning. You know, what a message that the brain is actually connected to the body.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
We need to tell insurance companies that, you know, because often they refuse treatment or impose higher treatment limitations, impose higher financial limitations on treatment of an illness of the brain when compared to any other illness of the body. It's shocking in this day and age, with all that we know about brain illnesses and the symptoms of those illnesses, which are often behavioral, that we refuse to treat these illnesses the same as any other physical health issue. And so I was honored in Congress to write the law that said that you needed to treat the same. It's the parity bill, on par, equality. That's the nature of the legislation. And we set forth in federal law very clearly that along all categories of care, inpatient, in-network, and outpatient, and out-of-network, and a pharmacy and ER benefits, that if it's treated for diabetes or cancer along a primary, secondary, tertiary levels of care, then it needs to be treated the same for mental illness and substance abuse disorders. So, you know, when you make those comparisons, you see where this notion of equality falls down. Because for diabetes, you try to prevent someone from having to have their legs amputated or going blind because of diabetes. We do primary care and early intervention. But in mental illness and substance use disorders, we routinely wait to the analogous having to have your legs cut off and have you go blind. That's how we wait to before we treat these illnesses. And just in the comparison to cancer, we would never imagine making someone wait till they had stage 4 cancer before we treated them. But routinely with mental illnesses and substance use disorders, we basically tell people, go away until your illness is acute, and then we'll treat you. That has to end. Too many of our fellows are dying, and we need to change this current status quo.
Well, because we know that treatment works, Patrick. We have treatment, and to some people, good treatment is affordable. But we have so many people who need help. So many people in New England.
Yes. Well, what we have is we've never been treated the same, so there hasn't been the effort towards really qualifying and tracking the treatment standards for these illnesses and establishing the same level of evidence base. So what ends up happening is we're blamed because we don't have the record that cancer and diabetes has in terms of what are the best treatment standards. We do have excellent outcomes when looked upon various types of interventions, but those interventions aren't universally kind of applied. We've got a very patchwork quilt of application of best standards and treatment. What we need to do is we need to pay for those treatments and make sure, therefore, that they are system-wide, so you're not just a luck of the draw whether you go to a facility that adheres to the evidence base in terms of intervention and, therefore, where recovery is really possible.
And think, you know, what I think I hear you saying is that, you know, there's the stigma and that people, it takes a lot for people to actually ask for help. And when they do finally, and if they do finally ask for help, then they do well while they're in treatment in a structured way. But we need to look at this full continuum of when they leave treatment, how do we continue making sure, ensuring that these people are getting the treatment that they need, that they're getting the follow-up and the supports that they need.
So that's why the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is so important, because we're like one of the early states that can apply this continuum of care. And the way this continuum of care works in the Accountable Care Organization is you're penalized if you don't have good results. So you need to invest in making sure that someone is supported, because if they're not supported and they end up back in treatment, well, you're going to get that knock against you, which is good, because we need to have the profit motive in helping keep people in recovery, as opposed to just treating them with their episodic illness. This is a chronic illness, which means you need to, like with my asthma, treat it every single day. But we don't have the recovery support services out there and reimbursed. And that is something that's got to change. And frankly, Massachusetts was one of the states that's an early adopter of trying to change that paradigm. And when it does so, it'll set a standard for other states that are going to be later adopters of this new thing called healthcare reform.
And we're proud of that in Massachusetts.
You're listening to Right Turn Radio on WRKO. We'll be right back with the rest of our speaker series interview with Patrick Kennedy right after the break. Welcome back. I'm John Cohan here with Abby Dean. You're listening to Right Turn Radio. Let's go to the part two of our interview with Patrick Kennedy.
I appreciate you and applaud you for coming forward with this powerful message, you know, and using your own personal experiences to kind of project you and this issue into the limelight. I want to hear a little bit about your mission to inner space, and you know, because you have brought some important people together to talk about addiction.
Well, I'm all about kind of the political science of neuroscience, meaning I'm for us understanding that we all have a common agenda, which is the brain. And yet we divide up our research as if we're all studying a different organ. So instead of really researching, you know, alcoholism and addiction and Parkinson's and ALS and Alzheimer's and autism and so forth, all along different clinical trials, let's find out which are the common mechanisms underlying many of these, both genetically and phenotypically, in terms of how we do research, so that we can learn from the research that's going on in other areas of brain science, because it's all the brain. We need to understand how this works in order to optimally treat it, and we need to reorganize ourselves. So new science is giving us new tools, and we need to approach this much like my uncle approached going to the moon. And when they put together NASA, they were basically saying, let's get this job together. Let's work and put these engineers with these scientists, with these experts here, and these to understand how do we work together so we get a better goal and a more effective output. That's how we need to organize this race to, quote, inner space, so the galaxy of neurons in our brain. So that's our One Mind for Research campaign. And, of course, this October we're going to mark President Kennedy's signing of the 50th anniversary of the Community Mental Health Act. We're going to bring all the stakeholders in mental health together for how are we going to work on this together, because we'll be stronger together than we will be divided.
What can you say to the people of New England about our veterans, about our court system?
Well, when I was in Congress, I had the chiefs of the police departments and the Brotherhood of Police Officers come to me and say, we have to do something because we're locking up our fellows. Because, of course, many of our law enforcement first responders also serve in the Guard and Reserve. And it was absolutely tragic that when returning home, many of those veterans were getting locked up because we didn't have ability to treat their, quote, invisible wounds of war the same way we would any other physical injury. And therefore, what happens? People end up in the criminal justice system. And that's got to change. And if we change it again for our veterans, we're going to change it for everyone else, because it's going to set the standard and the model. And I'm proud that in New England we've been proactive in really assessing the nature of the various crimes and how much those could be attributed to untreated mental illness and addiction. If you look at it, so many of these criminal justice issues are really issues of untreated health care. And so it begs the question, if we're going to spend all this money incarcerating people, all this money in criminal justice expense of enforcing the law and the court time, why aren't we spending a fraction of that money treating people in a way that's going to keep them out of the criminal justice system to begin with? That should be our goal. It'll not only save dollars, but it'll save the victims. The tragedies that we've seen over and over again of people who are victims of someone with an untreated mental illness.
You know, when I was on the road with the Del Fuegos, Tom Petty once told me, if you write a hit song, man, you got to love it, because you're going to have to play that song every day, and not get tired of it. Patrick Kennedy, thank you so much. I hope you never tire on this subject. I hope that you can continue talking about this. This is Right Turn Radio. My name is Woody Geisman, and thank you, Patrick Kennedy.
Thank you, Woody. Pleasure to be on you.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.